now to the fifth case on the morning call, United States v. Stoller, appeal number 08-4258. Mr. Layton.
Thank you. Good morning, and may it please the Court. There are two reversible errors that taint the conviction of my client, Mr. Stotler. First is the District Court's admission of Rule 404B evidence relating to the 2005 Davenport stop. And the second is admitting evidence from the search of his truck on arrest in violation of Gantt. I'd like to start, if I could, with the 404B evidence. This Court, of course, applies a four-part test to determine whether Rule 404B evidence is admissible.
Actually, your Gantt argument is a lot stronger. Maybe you'd like to start with that. Evidentiary arguments usually don't succeed.
I'd be happy to, although I would like to address it at some point this morning, because the Seventh Circuit has on several occasions ruled that it's abuse of discretion where no reasonable person could conclude that the intent in the 404B evidence is the same as the intent at issue. But with respect to the search of the truck, independent of the search incident to the arrest, there was no probable cause to support the search of the truck. Indeed, the District Court, in its ruling, concluded and corrected the magistrate judge on this point, concluded that there was no probable cause to search the truck or to stop the defendant when he arrived at Childress's house, where the proposed buy was to take place. And that conclusion was correct by the district judge, and it wasn't challenged by the government.
And the officers on the ground really didn't see anything, did they?
That's exactly right, and that's the critical point. And that's why when the district judge says there's no probable cause when he shows up to the house, but there is probable cause when he tries to leave the house, we have to look at, from the district court's perspective, what happened in the interim.
And the CI isn't wearing a wire or anything, so
that's right.
Like listening in on a deal.
It's even worse than that because, well, it's not worse than that, but it is... my understanding is that Childress was to give a signal when the buy occurred, and that didn't happen. All the police saw was a conversation or close proximity. Mr. Stotler get back in his truck and try to go away. So there's no probable cause independent of a search incident to the arrest here at all. So, and then what's the next thing that happens is they try to arrest him and what may have saved the day for Mr. Stotler is the police perception that he tried to resist arrest, because they get him out of the car and they put him on the ground and they handcuff him and there's a bunch of police there. Now, under Gantt, neither of the two Gantt exceptions applies. First, it's not reasonable to believe that the evidence relevant to the crime of arrest might be found in the vehicle, and we can even take the government's position and look at the three three reasons that they say that the defendant was arrested. First, his outstanding warrant for possession of pseudoephedrine. There's no reason to believe that he would have anything in his car related to that outstanding warrant.
Because that was a year prior.
Right. That's exactly right. Second, according to the government, he was arrested on an attempt to buy pseudoephedrine at Childress's house. But again, they hadn't seen the buy, and probably more importantly, at that point they'd already searched his person and found the $600 bills, which actually makes it less likely.
Well, wouldn't it go the exact opposite? They set up the deal, the guy shows up at the appointed time, he then drives away, and the police effectuate the arrest under the belief that the deal went down. And when they pull him out of the car and the pseudoephedrine is not on his person, it would be reasonable for them to believe that it's actually he's left it in the car. And so that, why isn't that a search, a valid vehicle search?
Because they didn't hear the signal. Because Childress said he would let the police know when the buy occurred.
How was he supposed to do that? If there was no telephonic or there was no contact between the two?
I don't know the answer to that question. My speculation would be a yell. But that's solely my speculation. There was a system worked out, and that did not occur, and it's uncontested that it did not occur.
Okay, so in any event, when they don't find the pseudoephedrine on him, why is it not reasonable for them to believe that it's in the car?
Because at
that
point,
just because there's no signal?
That's one reason. The second reason is that he has the six $100 bills still in his pocket.
Well,
the government point.
That doesn't mean, of course, he didn't have $1,200 when he showed up.
It doesn't mean, that's right.
So when you include the fact that he's got a prior meth conviction, a year before he's driving all over to Walgreens, all over Springfield looking for pseudoephedrine, they've done a search at his house before in response to a domestic disturbance, and they see meth-making equipment, and then they get an informant who says he's coming to the house to buy pseudoephedrine. Doesn't all of, and he shows up at the appointed time, doesn't that all go into this probable cause stew that amounts to probable cause?
Our view is no, and the district court agreed up to the point where he shows up at the house. So the district court agrees with respect to the, finding the meth lab, the prior purchases, and then the only additional evidence we have, or the only additional conduct at that point, is showing up at the house, at which time the government never. At which time the signal was not made. And so that's the only additional piece of evidence that occurs. With respect to the final reason that he was arrested, attempting to resist arrest, of course, that is a self-contained violation. There would be no reason to search the car for that reason. The second Gantt exception wouldn't apply either. There is no real possibility of access, and that's clear and uncontested by the government. There could be, in some situations, a harmless error analysis, but the government doesn't claim that it applies, and it would therefore be waived. It could not apply here either because, of course, the evidence obtained from the truck is most critical, and the government does not assert in this appeal that this court should not apply Gantt to this appeal, as courts of appeals have done, so that because there was no probable cause other than incident to the arrest, and because neither Gantt exception applies, the court should reverse the conviction for that reason. Unless there's any other questions relating to Gantt, I would like to turn for a moment at least to the Rule 404B evidence point. And the point that I think is most important here that I'd like to focus on is one element of the Rule 404B test, and that is the similarity required between the extrinsic evidence and the matter at issue. And the Torres case from this court instructs that when intent is the issue, then citing the Fifth Circuit's en banc case in Beecham, the intent in the extrinsic evidence has to be the exact same intent at issue here. In Torres, for example, the intent, relevant intent, was whether there was an intent to retaliate. And this court matched up whether an intent to retaliate was demonstrated in the extrinsic evidence and compared it to whether it was relevant here. That test would not be met here because the relevant intent is the intent to manufacture or distribute methamphetamine, and that's true with respect to counts 1, 2, and 3. Intent to manufacture methamphetamine in 1 and 2, and intent to distribute in 3. The extrinsic evidence here only shows, at most, an intent to buy pseudoephedrine or an intent to possess pseudoephedrine, and one need look no further than the government's closing argument on this point, where the government said to the jury, "Can there be any reasonable doubt, ladies and gentlemen, about what John Stotler's intent was in going on a 300-mile round trip to Davenport, Iowa? He went there to purchase pseudoephedrine pills for no other purpose." Again, the extrinsic evidence goes to an intent to buy pseudoephedrine at the most, an intent to possess it at the most, but it does not go to an intent to manufacture or to distribute methamphetamine. And
would somebody buy that quantity of pseudoephedrine?
Apparently, there's a market for the sale of pseudoephedrine. That's the sting would the attempted sting would suggest that. I mean, just like any input, there could be a market in and of itself without an intent to make it into something else. So here we have the situation like in Beasley, where you have proof of one drug crime not proving another. Indeed, it's even worse than that because there's no evidence that it was a crime to buy that amount of pseudoephedrine in Iowa at the time. Again, like the Gantt issue, the government does not claim that this error, if it occurred, was harmless, and it couldn't. And just to focus on one point of that, the government in its closing emphasized the Iowa stop consistently with respect to discussing the intent element, but most importantly, the government also tied the Iowa evidence into the main issue at trial, and that was Childress's credibility. And John Stotler's main defense at trial was that Childress had set him up. And the prosecutor, in discussing that defense, asked the jury to consider whether that defense was reasonable in light of all the evidence. The defendant went to Iowa. The defendant bought those pseudoephedrine pills, and Mr. Childress didn't. Because both errors taint the conviction here, we urge you to reverse the conviction.
Yes.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Timothy Bass on behalf of the United States. Your Honors, if I could briefly answer the 404B first and then spend most of my time on the second issue. It would be difficult to conceive of a better case where 404B evidence was relevant and appropriate on the issue of intent than this one. In many cases, a defendant's actions suggest his intent. For example, in a drug case where a defendant has possession of a large amount of drugs, a large amount of cocaine, the amount of the cocaine and the defendant's actions in possessing that amount suggest his intent. A kilogram of cocaine versus a gram would suggest that his intent was to distribute. This case, there isn't such an indication of intent by the defendant's actions. He possessed or attempted to possess a large amount of pseudoephedrine. And the jury would not know that in and of itself what his intent was. So his prior actions were relevant and indeed in this case critical to proving his intent. This wasn't a trip to Iowa to purchase innocuous over-the-counter items, as the defendant suggests in his brief. It was a trip out of state to surreptitiously purchase a substantial amount of pseudoephedrine at various stores which had been mapped out previously, following which the defendant was arrested and the pseudoephedrine had already been removed from its packaging before returning to Quincy, combined with his possession of lithium batteries and a smoking pipe. Your Honor asked the question, what other purpose would he have? And the answer is, there is no other purpose. For a person to have that amount of pseudoephedrine combined with lithium batteries and a smoking pipe, then that his purpose in possessing that pseudoephedrine was to make meth. And that's what this Court said in Vargas, that oftentimes the prior act's evidence is the only evidence to suggest intent. So that evidence was appropriate, and the District Court did not abuse its discretion in admitting it. Now, turning to the probable cause issue, Your Honors, I would commend to you the District Court's decision on the probable cause and suggest that this is not a case where the bounds of probable cause are being pushed. But even if you push probable cause aside, this search can be sustained under Gantt if it was reasonable for the officers to believe that evidence concerning the arrest would be found in the defendant's truck. And clearly, in this case, the answer to that is yes. As Your Honor also suggested, it's not just one fact, it's the totality of all the facts. The officers, what did they know? They knew that the defendant had previously been convicted of manufacturing methamphetamine. They knew a year prior to this incident that he had, that a search of his residence had been conducted and a meth lab was found where he was present. Pseudoephedrine was found inside the stove combined with lithium batteries and a scale. They knew that also a year earlier he had illegally purchased an illegal amount of pseudoephedrine. They knew that there was an outstanding arrest warrant for that illegal purchase of pseudoephedrine. Combining that...
The key to this line of evidence, counsel, is that it was a year earlier. That doesn't supply probable cause.
I understand that, Your Honor.
Suppose that there's pseudoephedrine or meth in his truck at the time of the arrest.
I agree with that, Your Honor. If you look just at the older evidence, that by itself would not. But if you combine that evidence with what the officers knew at the time, they knew that Mr. Childress had advised them that he had made arrangements with the defendant for the defendant to come to his residence and purchase pseudoephedrine. This is a repeat of Illinois v. Gates, the Supreme Court case, where the informant, even though he was not wired, even though there was not a recording of what he was saying with the defendant, the informant forecasted the defendant's future behavior. He told the officers that he had spoken with the defendant and that the defendant was coming to his residence to purchase pseudoephedrine for $600. The officer set up around the informant's residence, watched the defendant arrive, watched the defendant get out of his truck, meet with the informant, and then he left. At that time, the officers moved in and arrested the defendant, for which they had the authority to do based on the outstanding warrant. But then if you look at this incrementally, Your Honor, combine all the facts together, the officers attempted to arrest the defendant, and he repeatedly refused that arrest. When they ordered him to put his hands in the air, he put his hands in his pocket.
That doesn't help you, because if the arrest was for resisting, you've got the evidence. There's no evidence in the truck that will corroborate the crime of arrest.
Your Honor, the crime of arrest here is...
The crime of arrest has to be narcotics in order to give you probable cause to search the truck, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
And unless there was probable cause based on the transaction that was supposed to occur, there's no probable cause for the arrest or the search.
Well, keep in mind, Your Honor.
And my understanding is that it was undisputed there was to be some sort of a signal between Childress, the CI, and the cops who were watching but not really seeing anything when the transaction was completed, and that signal never occurred.
There was supposed to be a phone call, Your Honor, but the defendant got back in his truck and attempted to leave before that phone call occurred.
Well, I don't know that we can make that. There was supposed to be a phone call from Childress as soon as the transaction occurred.
Yes, Your Honor.
Occurred, and
yes.
You know, there was nothing, so far as the record suggests, that inhibited Childress from making the phone call. He didn't make it. So the condition precedent for the transaction having been completed didn't occur.
The informant's phone call did not occur. But what
that
did
was supposed to be the signal that the hand-to-hand transaction had occurred.
That's undisputed, Your Honor, yes.
And that signal didn't come.
It did not come. But the officers already had the authority to arrest the defendant. Based on the outstanding warrant.
Okay, that's a year earlier. That doesn't supply probable cause to think that there's narcotics in his truck on this date.
I agree, Your Honor. All I'm saying is that they had the authority to arrest the defendant at any time.
Right, but then that...
And what
under Gant, the search has to be based on cause to believe that there is evidence of the crime of arrest in the truck. And if the crime of arrest is narcotics a year earlier, that link isn't there.
Your Honor, I would say to you that the cause of arrest was not only the prior warrant, but that the defendant had completed the offense of attempted possession of pseudoephedrine. What did the officers know? They knew that...
But if it was attempted possession, then there's no reason to believe that he's going to have the drugs in his car.
Well, if he attempted...
And that wasn't the finding of the district court anyway, was it?
Well, the district court adopted one of the magistrate judge's conclusions. The magistrate judge concluded that there was probable cause. But what I'm saying is, even if you put the probable cause, the higher standard aside, under Gant, the search is sustained if the officers had reason to believe, reasonable suspicion. They knew that it was reasonable for the officers to believe, based on that the defendant had come to the house, as the informant had suggested he would. When they stopped him and arrested him based on that warrant, they found the amount of money in his pocket that the informant said he would have. He resisted arrest.
Right, but the fact that he still had the buy money suggested that the transaction didn't go down.
Well,
and that he did not have possession of the pseudoephedrine.
2 points.
So there isn't reasonable suspicion that evidence of the crime of arrest would be found in the truck.
2 points to that, Your Honor. One, the offense of attempted possession had already been completed.
Well, I understand that, but
and
if
secondly,
only an attempt, he wouldn't have the narcotics.
Well,
if
he attempted to possess one ingredient, a large amount of one ingredient to make methamphetamine, it's reasonable to believe that the vehicle in which he traveled to obtain that one ingredient would contain evidence of other ingredients. This wasn't just possession of cocaine, and the offense was completed by the defendant's possession of cocaine. This was an attempt to possess one ingredient to make meth. And if a defendant drives his vehicle a long distance to obtain one large amount of one ingredient,
it's reasonable to suspect he's got more of that ingredient in his truck.
Or another ingredient.
Were these officers ever asked whether they believed that the deal had gone down when they came down to arrest him? Were they under the belief that that he had actually bought the pseudoephedrine?
Your Honor, the answer to that is they did not know.
They certainly thought he completed the deal, I thought.
I think the conclusion to be drawn there is that they believed that the deal had gone down because the defendant got back in his truck and attempted to leave.
So when they pulled him over and pulled him out of the truck and he didn't have pseudoephedrine on him, wouldn't that supply the reason to believe, set aside Gant even, under the vehicle exception, that the pseudoephedrine is in fact in a car because it's not on his person?
Exactly, Your Honor. 2 points that I was trying to make was, one, the offense had already been completed, but at the time that the officers arrested the defendant, they did not know the specifics of the transaction, had it been completed, had the pseudoephedrine changed hands to the defendant. Simply because he still had the money in his pocket does not necessarily mean that the deal had not gone down or that the defendant did not have pseudoephedrine in his vehicle. And again, putting aside the probable cause, and the reason I put that aside is because all I'm asking here for is a narrow affirmance of the district court's finding, which was reason to believe, which is a lesser standard than probable cause. The officers arrested the defendant on a warrant for possession of pseudoephedrine, and after attempting to possess a large amount of pseudoephedrine on that day, certainly it was reasonable for the officers to believe that given that conduct with respect to one ingredient, that the vehicle would contain evidence of other ingredients.
You're not making a Leon argument?
No, I'm not, Your Honor. If there are no other questions, Your Honor, the government would ask that the district court's judgment be affirmed. Thank you.
You've run out of time, but we'll give you a minute.
Just 1 minute, like Mr. Josepher. There's a pretty big concession, I think, by the government right there, and that is that the cocktail of circumstances at issue when my client pulled into Mr. Childress's house, that by itself, the issues unrelated to what happened before then aren't enough. That means that that this court must look at the circumstances associated with the uncompleted drug buy to conclude that the search it was enough. If the question is whether it's reasonable to believe here, it would be patently opposite. It'd be unreasonable to believe here, unlike in Gates, there was a system set up. The police are waiting for a call. That call doesn't occur. That's why it would be unreasonable to believe that the buy did occur. For that reason, we'd ask that you reverse the conviction below. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. The case is taken under advisement.